experience with fabrications, exaggerations, and embellishments. You've got to assume that at some point in his life, he might have committed such an offense himself. It might be something major, or it might be something minor, like the time he lied to his parents about not feeling good or he didn't have to go to school. Whatever it was, the buyer knows that another person is capable of slight exaggerations, maybe even outright lies, because he's done so himself. The buyer believes now that if he's done this himself, you are even capable of doing it. Regardless of how honest you are, how much integrity you might have, your prospect believes that you are capable of those same things, and because of that, might not trust you completely. Disbelief and distrust is what is real to that person. So the element of distrust is intensified when your prospect has then had the negative experience of being ripped off by some earlier salesperson. See, that could be the cause. People have misunderstandings all the time, and misunderstandings can lead to distrust. I want you to try this simple exercise to prove my point. Write down a short story. I don't care what the short story is. Tim went to the store, found a cat. Cat was black. Some guy walked in, stole the cat, and went to a store and cashed it in for $54. I don't care. Make up a story, okay? Write it down about something that happened to you. And I want you to read that story to one person. And tell that person to pass that on to another person. And then have them pass it on and do that to at least five people. Now, I want you to have the fifth or sixth person come back to you and tell you the story that they were told and compare it to what you wrote down. I assure you, that story will have changed, and the story will not change because of lies, but because of incorrect duplication and misunderstandings. If you had passed your story in writing to each person, that would have greatly reduced the chance of any misunderstandings. Why? People believe what they see, not what they hear, and what you say and what you write, the saying's misduplicated and the writing is not. So how do you handle the buyer's distrust? The rule to handling a buyer's distrust is always use and show written material to support your presentation and proposal. Whether it's on the internet, on a telephone call, in person, always support your presentation in writing. When you're documenting facts for your customer, it's preferable to use third-party materials to support what you're saying. Remember, people believe what they see, not what they hear. So always, always, always write down what you've said, offered, proposed, promised, implied, and suggested. Anytime you're going for a close, insist on putting it in writing. God, I see so many salespeople shying away from contracts, buyer's orders, and signatures. Why? Because they falsely believe that they may scare the customer with a pen or a contract? This is ridiculous. It's a ridiculous assumption that has no basis in reality. You don't go into a military operation without equipment and supplies and would never, ever go for the close without a pen and a contract. There's nothing to hide. You're on a covert operation. Or some kind of criminal that needs to sneak around. You're not black ops. You are a salesperson, a professional. You're great. You're a professional that offers a product that will benefit, that will solve problems for your prospect when they purchase and own it. So when you're presenting your product, write it down or show them the benefits on paper. If you're showing them how your product will improve their business, show them that proof by statistics, success stories, video, audio, anything you can show them that tells the story so you don't have to. I used to keep an evidence manual with me to show my facts and what others had said as a result of doing business today. Now, that evidence manual in writing today could be completely replaced with video, where you can show somebody a movie where they can see all these people that have bought from your facts and figures. The internet can be used like that. People love to see that you're prepared, love to see that you're sold on your product, and love to see that you can support it with factual data. When you show them what your competition will do or will not do, prove it in writing. Don't tell them what they'll do or what they won't do. It's words. Nobody believes them. When you know you've got the best price, the best product, and the best service, always back it up with documentation. If you can do this satisfactorily, you'll earn trust and reduce the prospect's need to shop, to think, to research, to talk to others, all the while increasing your odds of closing a deal. Now, it's incredible how much significance people place on the written word, and you want to capitalize on it. Every day, people quote things that they read in the paper without ever researching it for themselves. You ever seen that? Hey, did you see what was in the paper today, man? They don't even know if it's true. They're just regurgitating what they saw and believe to be true because it was written down. They assume if it was written that it had to be true. Hey, folks, people read books in school and go the rest of their lives believing it was true. 20 years ago, a book was written. The first line read, "Life is difficult." This book became a national bestseller, and everyone adopted this one line as truth. life is difficult. When it's garbage, life is not difficult unless you agree with the line. That line certainly is not true for me. It may be true for you, but it's not for me. And it's definitely not a quote that I want to live the rest of my life for. But because it was written, people assumed it to be true and adopted it as their own reality. Newspapers perpetuate things that are not true. History books are filled with errors, opinions, false reports, agendas, and even outright lies every day. Hey, we still don't know how Kennedy was killed, okay? Even though it was printed, what happened? Most of the public, not sure. UFOs, real or not real? Hey, man, I got to see some evidence, okay? But there's a big question mark because they've been in papers a lot. Some of the best known books were written many, many, many years. I'm talking about some of the top one, two, or three books, okay? They were written 70 years after the events took place and long, long after all the players were dead. Yet, if it is written in a book, people tend to believe it to be true. Remember the movie, Jerry Maguire, where the character played by Cuba Gooding Jr. kept saying to Tom Cruise's character, "Show me the money, show me the money." In sales, the customer is Cuba, screaming, "Show me the data, show me the data." See, that's the point here. Show the proof to the prospect. Make it real to him, and he'll have confidence to buy. With the abundance of information available today through third parties, consumer guides, the internet, other sources, your prospect has become more dependent on facts to support his decision making. Buyers are going to continue to rely on these sources. So you need to make use of the same sources to support your cause and help the buyer make a right decision and make it now. Anytime you're presenting product information, performance reports, facts, historical data, comparison information, pricing data, proposals, etc., the rule is don't tell, show. The automotive industry is notorious for not wanting to give information. Over the past years, they're making great transformations today, but they were notorious for a long time for not wanting to give information to prospects. And because of this era, the industry suffers from high turnover, poor loyalty, customer loyalty, high advertising costs, shrinking profits, and tremendous, tremendous pressure from the manufacturers onto the individual owners to change. The premise was, hey, look, in the beginning, in the cowboy days of the automobile industry, the less everybody knows, the better off everybody is. Well, today in the 21st century, nothing could be further from the truth. The more people know, the more they can trust the information, the more likely they are to buy, to make a decision, to roll, to let's roll, let's do it. See, by offering written information, your sales will become easier. You'll make more money and you'll have more satisfied clients. As a salesperson, I personally prefer informed, intelligent, loaded up with information, logical, informed buyers over uninformed buyers for the very reason that an informed buyer, informed, he has data, can make a decision, and can be handled with logic, while the uninformed cannot make a decision and tends to get emotional as a way to make a decision. When facts, data, logic are missing, people get emotional. And when people get emotional, they get irrational. It's okay to sell with emotion, but you want to close the deal with logic. This is a big mistake made with all salespeople in all businesses. Listen to this. It's okay to sell with emotion, but when you close a deal, you want to wrap it up with logic, data, and facts. An informed, professional buyer, in my mind, is much, much easier to sell than one that is not informed because the uninformed can't make decisions with trust. Someone who is not informed about the product will make an offer that has actually no reality involved in the offer. Why? Because there's nothing based in logic. That would be an emotional offer he made, not a logical one. See, I want logic and facts in the close on my side, not just emotions in the close. When people get emotional, they get stupid. So I want to keep people logical, and I keep people logical by providing them with credible, very credible and trustworthy validation that they can trust. So here's some tips on using written and visual information to close. Never sell with words. Always show documentation. Never negotiate with words. Write your negotiations down on paper. Never ask for the close with words. Use a buyer's order. Never make verbal promises. Put your assurances in writing. The more data, the better. Don't be afraid to use lots of data. Use more information overload. Keep your information current. Have your written information available and easy to access. Use third-party data as much as possible rather than your biased data. The more you're able to access data in real time, the better and the more believable. Real-time data is preferable to prepared data. Use computer-generated data where possible. Have the internet access available so you can pull, it'll probably be the grid, not the internet in a few years, so you can pull that data off the grid up in front of the customer and they can see that it has actually not been contrived or manipulated. So make it easy for the buyer to do research while they're with you instead of at home or in their office when you can't be there. Like, make it so easy they don't have to look up anything else. If the buyer wants to look up their own information or research, let them do it, but let them do it there. Make the technology available. Give the information so they can easily grab it. Now, after consulting thousands of companies on improving their sales processes, I've encouraged businesses, management, and salespeople to make all competitive advertising also available and fully displayed in their offices so that if this person wants to actually shop, he doesn't have to leave. He doesn't have to go out. He doesn't have to look at what the competition is doing, but can actually go to a wall and see, hey, by the way, this is what our competition will do for you. Look, you got to help them believe you. People want to believe you, but you have to help them. If you have a good product and a good service, then do everything you can to build your case and do it with written information. That way the buyer doesn't have to trust you. I don't want them to trust me. Once they read that what you're saying is so, they have no choice but to believe in you. You know, that 144-unit condo project I was telling you about? We had some trouble selling it for a time. I decided to visit the building and find out what was going on. Walked in, immediately saw, hey, no place to sign in. Pricing wasn't available. Pricing sheet's not there. Can't get a rate. Can't get a payment. I mean, I can, but nobody can see it. The computer's in the back office. There's no competitive pricing displayed. Got rid of the project manager, installed a new group of inexperienced, eager, willing salespeople, made sure they had all the information out front, up front. We sold 30 units in 3 months. That was three times the sales from the previous year. Some people distrust the selling profession because of the actions of a few criminals and the inactions of the many good intentioned salespeople who didn't understand this basic rule of selling. People believe what they see, not what they hear. So show them, don't tell them. Chapter 11, Give, Give, Give. The magic of give, give, give. You know, selling is the act of giving. It is not the act of getting. Servicing people, not just selling them. Unfortunately, most people in sales are looking for their commission and what they're going to get out of the deal rather than what they're going to actually give, what their product really offers, and how the client will truly benefit. The old adage is that it's better to give than to receive. But in selling, the only way to truly receive is to give first. I believe that the true essence of selling is not just getting the sale, but the sincere desire to help people. I also believe that a spiritually aware person will ultimately be a better salesperson than someone just interested in monetary compensation. I also believe and have validated with my own life that if you could give enough in life, life will give you back. It's the same in sales as it is in life. I don't mean giving the lowest price or giving the product away or giving your services away, but giving the most attention, giving the most energy, the best attitude, and the highest level of service. Give, give, give is the assurance of sale, sale, sale. You know what I'm saying? Sell. Get a sale, not on sale. If your client wants one option, give them three or six or even 12. I created a software program years ago for retailers based on this give, give, give philosophy. The program is called ePencil, trademarked ePencil, and provides clients with multiple options on different products in a succinct and very professional manner. ePencil has been extremely successful in the automotive industry, where for years they, and we discussed this earlier, where they were inclined not to give information or only give limited information. What I introduced was a program that when customers ask for information, they're given an array of payments, package options, and price information, thereby making the buyer feel serviced rather than sold. This concept of taking give, give, give to an actual application resulted in increased profits, increased sales, and happier customers for automotive dealers. It fully utilizes the idea that service is senior to selling and giving is senior to getting. If someone asks me for a drink, I get it for them. I open the bottle, I bring them a glass, I bring them ice in a glass, and I bring them a napkin. See, that's give, give, give in action. I don't ask them, hey, do you want a glass? Can I get you ice? No, just deliver, deliver, over deliver, and leave it to them whether they want it with the bottle, whether they want me to pour it on ice, whether they even want a napkin. If I'm a waiter, I don't ask you if you want dessert after dinner. I bring you the dessert tray, tell you about each one, tell you about my favorite, and I dare you to pass. See, I can service you into a dessert without ever looking like I was trying to sell anything. A friend of mine told me a story that really, really illustrates this give, give, give attitude. She and her husband were leaving a restaurant in New Orleans, Louisiana one evening. As they walked out onto the street, a haggard-looking man in a threadbare coat approached them. He immediately approached them and asked the husband for permission to serenade his wife. Reluctantly, the husband agreed, and the man dropped down on his knees before her right there on the sidewalk and began singing. She said that the incredible voice and heartfelt passion that came from this desperate character was powerful enough to blow the glass out, I think she was exaggerating, of every window on the block. That man went on singing for 2 minutes, pouring his heart and his soul into that song and giving that couple every fiber of his being. When he finished, they were speechless. Her husband reached into his pocket and handed the guy $100. With tears of gratitude, the man thanked him, then ran down the street to a beat-up car where inside his wife and children were waiting. The only thing that the guy had to offer was his voice, and he knew that if he didn't give it right then and right there, his family wasn't going to eat that night. My friend's husband, a career salesman, said he'd been so impressed by the man's intention to make this give, give, give thing that he hardly felt $100 was even enough. That man on the street poured his soul into that song with the give, give, give attitude, not knowing there was no promise that the couple would even give a tip. Regardless, for those 2 minutes, he belonged entirely and completely to that couple. See, give all you can to a prospect, not just to part of you. Give all. Give all of your attention, all of your energy, all of your suggestions, all of the information you have available, and then find some more to give. Exceed the expectations. Go all the way. And then go a little further. Withhold none of you. Give yourself completely without reservation. As a customer or client, I don't want to have to ask you, the salesperson, for something. I want you to offer it to me. I want you to predict what I need and offer it to me. I don't want to work. I want to be provided with what I need, what I ask for, and everything else that will help me in making a decision. This shows me that you or he or whoever wants to take care of me, that you're thinking like me, and you actually want to predict my expectations, fulfill my expectations, and surpass them all at the same time. You know what that is? Deal closed. Now, this is called love the one you're with, and it's very important. Always pay attention to your prospect, your customer, or the person you're proposing to, and stay with them from start to finish without allowing interruptions. Show them how important they are to you and how they're the most important person in your universe at that time. If you can do that, you will be rewarded. If you chase two rabbits at the same time, both, as the old saying, both rabbits will get away. Commit to the one you're with all the way. Handle your phone calls and emails later. That little Jackberry you got, Blackberry, or your little iPhone, and you're taking messages while you're trying to handle people, big mistake. Don't allow the interruptions. Make your total commitment to that opportunity, to that proposal, to that prospect, and let them know that. Give them all of you, and you'll see that you're with them all the way. When they see that, they're going to get with you all the way, regardless of them taking calls or them being interrupted. Keep your focus on the person you're with. Too often, people feel neglected in life. So don't let them have that experience with you. Show them complete attention from beginning to end. Give, give, give. Your full, undivided, complete, 100% attention to your customer, and don't stop until you bring it all home. Make it your goal to give all of your attention to the customer, regardless of the quality or estimated odds of you even getting a deal. Human beings are more valuable than money. Treat them like they will reward you, and you will be rewarded. In the business of sales, you have to be willing to serve people, not just sell people. For a business to survive, that means you, for you, because you're a business too, to survive and prosper, It has to serve and help others, not just sell products. That means taking care of customers and going beyond their expectations will equal survival. The best salespeople that I have ever met were not the fast-talking guys, but the most service-oriented people. Those professionals that care the most are the ones who go that extra distance to find ways to actually improve the customer's life. Are you a Holiday Inn or are you a Ritz-Carlton? You know, as a salesperson, which one do you represent, Holiday Inn or Ritz? Be honest with yourself, and you'll see why you're being paid what you're currently being paid. If most of your customers are grinding you on price, then your level of service is not obvious to them. Otherwise, they wouldn't grind you on just price, as they would value the service that you're giving them. Look, if they're treating you like a $49 room, okay, in the negotiations, it's because you're presenting like a $49 room. One time I had, well, this was maybe 3 years ago, I had 1,700 units available for sale in Tucson, Arizona. I had real estate agents lined up around the block begging for this listing. It was clear that I was going to sell the whole portfolio, but none of them got the deal because I didn't trust they would service me the way I wanted, except for this one guy. I gave it to this one guy that I knew, that I trusted, and I actually paid him more than I had to pay the rest of the market because I believe he would service the deal from start to finish and actually get us a deal. I chose him because I truly believed that I could count on him to give me the best advice and give me the best service. The agent that I chose was someone I believed in and I was willing to pay extra for. Why would I do that? Because like most people, I don't want the best deal. I want the best service. I want the best product. I want the best representation. I want to be sure we get a deal, not just the best price. Sure, I want the best price, but leave that up to me. I'll negotiate the deal at the end. I want to know that you're going to be there for me no matter what. I want to know that there's not going to be unnecessary drama and conflict. And if there is, I want to know that you'll handle it. See, selling is about helping people, not just selling people. If you like helping people and perfect the other points, you will be great at this deal. Many salespeople who I've met who otherwise could have been great salespeople and have unfortunately been corrupted by those around them and been led to believe that they should rely on trickery and deception. Look, you don't have to trick or deceive to sell. You have to be willing to serve. You have to be willing to help people before you'll ever truly get consistent at closing more sales. The more you're able to demonstrate that service-oriented attitude, the easier you will find your job to be. And trust me, no matter how much you serve someone, you'll still have to be prepared to ask, will that be cash, check, or a credit card? Because service alone will not separate people from money, trust me. Service is the only way to higher prices. Service is the only way to less competition. A salesperson caught in a constant price conflict will never agree with my point because they are stuck and price is their only solution. But price is not a solution. Never has been and never will be. Service is the only competitive solution left for you in the marketplace. A better product is not a solution because sooner or later, someone will have similar or better products and then will later sell them at lower prices. Look, a buyer will pay extra for great service. They'll pay extra for a great attitude. They'll pay extra for ease of service and convenience. And they'll pay extra when they feel special. Look at how you create a level of service and how it can separate you from others. Going to the client rather than the client coming to you is service. It's so simple, man. Let me go to them rather than them come to me. Providing options, solutions, choices is a way to service people. It doesn't cost you anything. Sending gifts, flowers, notes, or just dropping by to say hello. That's service too. A big smile, full attention, a great attitude. Service. You know, a can-do attitude. A bigger smile than anybody else. Always being up. That's service. I get a lower price and I get less service. Look, I can get a room at the Holiday Inn. There are always one there. You know, they always have a room available for me. And it's at a fraction of the price of a room at the Ritz, but the Ritz is always full. And it's $400 more money. And I'd still rather pay the extra money. What do I get for saving $400? What do I get? I get a cheaper room. I get no service. I get I don't care attitudes. It's $400. But the difference between a $500 room and an $80 room is one thing, and it's not $420. It's service. It's me feeling good. It's me having an experience. So I say it's one thing, but the truth is service turns into all of that. You don't have to look far to find companies that are known for great service and higher prices. People even brag that they pay extra to do business with these people. Example, Tiffany's, Ritz Hotels, Four Seasons, American Express Centurion, okay? Look, there's high-end beauty shops in Los Angeles that charge $700 for a haircut. They're not selling haircuts. They're giving service in abundance. People go there and get drunk while they're getting a haircut. So I'm not sure whether they're getting haircuts or paying for alcohol. It's service people want. They want to be pampered, taken care of. See, this kind of service is no different for a salesperson. If you elevate your level of service above the rest of the market, and I'm not talking about getting your clients drunk, your customers will quit shopping you on price. I promise you, elevate your service. Elevate your credibility. Elevate your attitude and people will quit shopping you and jacking you. How much are you willing to bend over backwards? I mean backwards to make sure your customer is truly happy. You know, I attended a seminar once. I mean, I've attended many seminars, but I remember this one seminar, and I was there as a salesperson, and the speaker said that when you call people back and do follow-up, you should never ask them how the product is working because it opens the conversation up to problems. While the audience in masses agreed, I sat there in absolute disagreement. Hey, if my customer's having a problem, I want to know what it is so I can handle the problem. Problems and dissatisfaction are opportunities for me to shine. Problems are an opportunity for you to be of service, and service equals more sales. I don't want to separate myself from a problem. I want to sell again. It's not a service department's problem. It's my customer's problem, and I want to take care of that problem. Tip, big tip, problems equal opportunities for future sales. Problems equal opportunities for future sales. And it also is an opportunity for you to shine. Service has to become senior to selling. No amount of slick advertising or public relations can replace poor service. Twice a year, my wife and I go shopping for new clothes. And one time we decided to go to a big department store in our neighborhood where they'd recently started promoting their new image of personal service and customer satisfaction. After 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes of walking through this store, not one person greeted us, not even a hello. It was unbelievable to me, particularly with what I do. I'm acutely aware of service or no service. Here's two qualified buyers with the intent to buy something. We went there to hook up. We cleaned the trunk of our car out before we left in order that we could have space for packages. And there was no one even willing to help us. They didn't even acknowledge we were there. What are these people thinking? What is management thinking? I left that store feeling infuriated and swore I could never buy there again and swore actually I would never even shop there again. Well, I'd never waste another moment there in my own mind at that time. It would have been easier to steal merchandise from this place than to buy merchandise. When I got back home, I went through my mail, and what did I find? A slick invitation from the same department store inviting me to come down and shop their big sale. Wow. They're advertising to people that aren't even in the market in hopes of getting them there, and when I do go there, even without the advertising, nobody's there to take care of me. This is the tremendous waste in all businesses today. The idea that we would advertise our way to a sale without servicing our way to sale is not only improbable, very expensive, and it doesn't work. Service is always senior to selling. The servicing should be senior to the advertising. You know, you can't just change the name of the company, Courtesy Plumbing, and all of a sudden you're courteous, you know? True Service Lightning Corporation. Yeah, well, why are you using that name? Because you don't service? See, one of the best people I've ever known who is an incredible example of high levels of service is my friend, Gavin Potter. Now, while I consider Gavin a friend, he sells me constantly on contributing money for projects for which he raises money. I consider him a friend and not a salesperson because of the extraordinary amount of service he gives me. He is an incredible salesperson, yes, but above that, His dedication to high levels of service, you know, his commitment to his purpose alone and his dedication to high levels of service to the public he works with is what makes Gavin great. One without the other results in mediocrity. Look, I gotta have the purpose and I gotta have the service. You can't have the purpose. I'm gonna go help give, but I don't really have a drive to do it or a purpose. I gotta have both of them. I gotta have the purpose. I'm doing the right thing. And two, the willingness to give and service. Well, Gavin has both loaded, service and purpose. I guarantee if Gavin run his statistics, he would find that his sales rise, go into affluence with every service-oriented action he performs. He knows that service is senior to the sale, especially with me, and that is why he is in a league of his own as a salesperson. Truly one of the greats, Gavin Potter. If you incorporate these simple truths about giving and providing service, I'm not talking about the company, you as an individual, top, incredible, phenomenal service, I assure you that you'll become a master of your trade. You'll experience a confidence that you cannot put value on, that is worth more than money. You'll be able to name your own price, go where you want, work with whom you choose, sell whatever product you choose to sell, and provide for yourself and your family in a way that most people only dream of. You'll also experience a lifestyle that very few people actually have, one free of stress and worry and problems. So give of yourself fully and provide unparalleled levels of service, and people will quit shopping your price. Chapter 12, The Hard Sell. The hard sell. What does that mean, man? Is the sale hard? No. The hard sell. It has been said that you have to ask someone 5 times before you will ever get a yes. Well, I don't know if that's true or not, but I do know that most people will not buy without someone asking them to buy, and people will never say yes to someone who quit asking for the sale. Impossible. It has been my experience that the moment you quit asking, for sure, the deal is dead. It's like the moment you quit swinging the bat, I promise you, you can't hit a home run, a single, or a double. But you can certainly be striked out. It has also been my experience that most people will not just give you money without you asking and then persisting and being willing to even hard sell. Now, I'm not talking about pressuring people when I say hard sell. I'm talking about being willing to get to that hard place in the close where everyone may get a little bit uncomfortable. Now, I want to go back and talk about that earlier chapter, give. Attitude, all that. Look, if you don't close them and you don't ask for the close and you can't stay in the close and you aren't willing to get uncomfortable in the close to get the separation and the agreement, which is called the hard sell, you're not going to get it, no matter how nice you are to people. The salesperson must be willing to persist even when it gets hard, difficult, or uncomfortable. And that is what is meant by a hard sell. A buyer once told me, Grant, hey, buddy, you're pressuring me. And to that I explained, sir, you're confusing my belief and my passion in knowing that this is the right product for you and your company with pressure. Please don't misinterpret my enthusiasm for pressure. Now let's do this. See, when you hit hard sell status, when you hit that place that gets difficult, you've become so convinced that your company or product is the only answer and no other choice would even be a possibility. It actually would be a disservice. At the place of hard sell, you're certain that your service is superior, your product is superior to anyone else and to any other product. And ultimately, that the only right choice the customer or your prospect can make is with you, and therefore you must insist on it regardless of the discomfort that might be felt at the negotiating table. Because you believe this so deeply, you're willing to stay in the deal even when it gets uncomfortable, thus the hard sell. And people are squirming. They're making excuses. They're becoming difficult. They're maybe even getting emotional, and you stay there even when it's uncomfortable and stay in the deal. You know, one of the best salespeople I've ever met in my whole life is a lady named Charmaine Rogers. She is a full-time fundraiser and a dedicated master of selling, of service, and of closing deals. This woman is a lethal, incredible weapon, arsenal of technology of wrapping a deal up. Charmaine isn't selling a tangible product. She's raising money for a charity. You don't get anything. You get a feel good. Hey, I helped out. You don't get a product. You don't get a car to drive in. You know, you don't get a country club to play golf at. You don't get a new addition to your house. She is getting people to give money for charities that are helping other people in the world that people probably won't even meet. Well, she called me one night. She said, hey, Grant, I'd like to get an appointment with you to meet with you. And I agreed with her. I'll give you some time, Charmaine, but I made it crystal clear to her. Look, I'm done making any contributions, Charmaine. I love you. I'll do anything to help you. I've helped you in the past, but I'm done. I fulfilled all my charitable donations for the year. Yes, Charmaine says, no problem, Grant. I just want to come over. I want to see you and I want to catch you up. Well, she came over. We talked for a while and then she starts moving in on me. She asked me to think about donating more. And I got furious. I adamantly told her, no, absolutely not. No way. I already told you I'm done with it. I've done all my donations. I'm done for the year. I'm freaking out, right? I'm done, Charmaine. Unshaken by my outbursts, she looked at me with a smile and said, and this woman is, lethal professional. She's beyond a great. She looks at me and says, now, Grant, the only reason you're acting like this is you know you haven't done enough. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe her audacity to take everything I just said and handle me. See, once the initial shock wore off, I started laughing and did what all people do when they're being sold. I gave more. I did. I started laughing. I'm like, you know what? You're right, Charmaine. I haven't done anything. That's why I'm acting like this. Charmaine, because of her dedication to her cause, her purpose, she's a master, but also because she is willing to stay in the sale when it gets emotional. When most people blow out because they don't want to handle the discomfort. You want to get away from it. But not Charmaine, not true greats. Look, she could have been polite. She could have left. She could have said, yeah, I agreed to come over. And you said, don't ask me. She could have just done that. She could have started hollering at me. She could have got irrational herself. But she didn't do any. She stayed cool. She stayed calm. She stayed in the deal. And she got the close. The willingness to stay and persist when the prospect becomes noisy and emotional is what separates a professional, consistent closer, a great, from an amateur who randomly closes any deal. If you don't truly believe that your product will somehow bring the buyer more enjoyment, more benefit, more security, greater than the numbers they have in the bank that they have to transfer to you, then you'll never be a great salesperson and you'll never fully understand the concept of hard sell. If you really believe and learn how to close, you'll know someday what it means to be a hard sell, and this is an absolute art form. Now, the formula for being a hard sell, there are only two things that can get you to the point of being a true professional hard sell closer. And again, I'm not talking about pressure. I'm not talking about anything that's, just grinding people to death. I'm talking about a professional. I mean, they don't even know. They feel so good about it that this is happening, but you're willing to go through that hard place to get it. Number one, you must have the belief that what you're offering is the right thing. That means, first chapter of the book, you got to be sold completely. Completely sold. Number two, you have to be trained to stay in the close, in the deal, in the discomfort. You have to be willing to do that and able to do that no matter what happens, which means you'll need to be armed with an arsenal of ways to handle stalls, to handle emotional reactions, and to handle objections. My closing program called The Closer's Arsenal is vital for arming you up with technology to master the hard sell. So be sure you get that. Closing, it's like a recipe. It's like I need to know the ingredients. There's no way around the fact that you have to know what to say and it has to sound natural. Now, does this mean you need to become rote in your responses and have some formulated way to handle a specific objection? Yes, absolutely. It's a recipe. It takes certain ingredients combined together in a certain order, put into the oven at a certain temperature for a certain amount of time, and you will get pronto, bake-o, close-o. Do it exactly per the recipe, and you will get what you anticipated. Change one thing, and you won't. You'll get something else. The more you practice handling objections, the more natural you will sound. It is like the grandmother who makes fudge without even looking at the recipe. She has done it so many times over the years. She doesn't need to read over a list of ingredients anymore. She knows what to do, and the fudge comes out perfect every time. It's the same thing with handling objections and closing deals. There is nothing wrong with learning what you're going to say. There's nothing wrong with drilling that exactly, and how you handle certain situations needs to be practiced. Look, if you were given a press conference to the world, You'd drill and practice what you were going to say, right? Before you said it. You'd consider how your address would be perceived and the effect that it might create before you even go out in front of the world with it. Well, you'll have to do the same thing to prepare yourself to become a professional hard sell closer. Look, the truth is there's no money in selling. I hate to tell you that. The real rewards, the real dough, the real money, the real freedom comes from closing a deal. So you'll need to learn how to close, and you'll need to learn how to stay in this thing to hard sell close. You need to practice handling the objections and the stalls so that you can persist intelligently through resistance. Look, I practiced this for years, 5 years every day, just practice closing in front of a video camera, on audio. Every morning I'd team up with another salesperson and we'd practice every possible situation we could possibly encounter that day. This turned me into a lethal individual at closing deals. Truth is, if you can't close, you lose. And the truth is, if you have a great product and a great service, and you have a great, maybe a piece of material for Hollywood, and you can't close people on putting money into that project, if you can't close, you lose and they lose. Everybody, the whole world could lose if the project's good enough. Well, I've done this in many different industries, only to find out I've worked with insurance people, money people, finance people, financial planners, real estate people, insurance salesmen, car salesmen, entire industries, guys trying to change industries. I've done this thing called closing in many different industries, only to find out that all objections are very, very similar from one industry to the other. And the closing techniques cross over from one industry to the next. But look, the techniques don't matter if you can't persist. If you can't stay in and can't fire the weapon, you've already left the scene. You can't close. If you can't persist with closes due to the fact that you run out of material, then you'll never reach the level of being hard sell anyway. If you can't handle the emotional outburst, you're going to blow out even if you know the information. So both have to be drilled. If you don't learn how to do this thing called hard sell, you will not make it to be one of the greats. You know, I suggested to you earlier to work out how you're going to handle these situations. I don't want you to look shocked or surprised or having to run out somewhere to figure out, hey, what do I do now? I don't want you going home to think about it, driving home, oh, I could have done that different, that different, and that different. Leave that for amateurs. For you to be a professional and you to get professional, great results, you have to know what you'll do and say in every situation. Video yourself and perfect your techniques. Record yourself. Watch your gestures, hand motions, even your emotional responses. Control them. Throughout the day, write down your objections as we discussed. Sit down the next day and go over with another team member. Hey, how am I going to handle this? Drill it. Practice it. This builds confidence. You're already doing this now, whether you know it or not, but you're just drilling in bad habits, not good ones. And remember, standing is for losing. Sitting is for closing. And this is about closing the deal, about being a hard sell. I've watched many, many salespeople make the mistake as they enter negotiations standing up. And this is a common error. They stand there talking about their prices, their payments, their plans, their proposal, their program, their guarantees, their benefits, and in so doing are only talking, not showing, and aren't even in a position to close. No wonder they can't close. They're not in a position to. How can you? They're talking too much. They're not using anything to establish their credibility. Remember, what does your buyer believe? They believe what they see, not what they hear. Talking and telling isn't closing. Your selling should be over with now. You're in a position to take a shot at a close. You have to be sitting down with the customer. You know, you'll almost never close a deal by standing up. Standing is for leaving. It's over with. Sit your client down. Show them what you can do for them, how you can support them. Support them with the facts. Substantiate. Standing up is for walking. Sitting down is for closing. Sit your customer down. Get your buyer in a position to be close. Sit right here, sir. Let me show you the facts about the product. Don't pitch it. Show it. When you're making a proposal, sit the buyer down, write down the facts, the figures. Telling him verbally is a waste of time. It's a waste of effort and will almost always result in no close. So seat your buyer, show them what you've got, be prepared to hard sell, be prepared to stay in the deal, be enthusiastic, and close the deal. Chapter 13, Massive Action. Most people incorrectly estimate the amount of effort it takes to get the results they want. When it comes to taking action, never think in terms of balance, ever. Always think in terms of massive amounts of action. Assume in the case of action that more is always better and less will be nothing. Whatever you think you need to do to get a job done, increase the amount far greater than you think is necessary, and you will get results beyond your wildest expectations. Now look, this is where I know a tremendous amount, okay? I own 4 businesses today, and I assure you, they're there and they're doing well because of this one thing, massive action. Never let the psychiatrist, the psychoanalyst, the new age type with all the information about get balance, that psycho babble, mumbo jumble, get balance, find yourself, stop pushing yourself, be in the moment, live in the moment. Look, kill it. You want to make things happen? This advice is incorrect. It is for those who will have mediocre lives. There is no evidence to substantiate that this advice is valuable for making things happen. Now, I'm talking to people about that want to make things happen, that want to be great, that want to be incredible, that want to make their dreams come true. You're going to have to kick it, and you're going to have to kick it with massive, massive amounts of action. The more I work and the more I accomplish, the better I feel. The less I do, the more tired I feel. You ever had that experience? You know, I'll be sick. I get a flu or something, right? And I stay in bed. The longer I stay in bed, the worse my body hurts. I pull my back and my back goes out. I lay in bed because I'm trying to retreat from the back. And the longer I stay in bed, I got to get up. I got to get out. I got to walk around. When it comes to getting big results in life and becoming wildly successful that you deserve, you have to take action in that direction of massive quantities. There's no way around it. Look, there's no way for me to self-pedal this thing and say, okay, you can do average amounts of action and you're going to get great things in your life. It's not true. I love action. And the more action, the better. For me, the more wood I add to the fire, the hotter it gets, the more excited I get. The more out of control things get, the more interesting they become. I want to burn the house down. What about you? See, I love getting things done, and I'll bet you do too. I bet you love finishing tasks. I love and believe that you probably love the satisfaction of accomplishing a task, start to finish. I'm happiest when I'm producing. I'm happiest when I'm creating, and I bet you are too. I love working in my yard more than I like lying on my sofa. Why? Because I'm getting something done. If you want to get any place in life, you have to take action. If you want to take a trip, you have to fill the tank with fuel. Then you have to get in the car. Then you have to turn the car on. Then you have to accelerate the car down the highway. Then you have to submerge yourself with other traffic and possibly get hit. If you want to build a house, you have to pound nails and pour concrete. If you want to win the lottery, you have to buy a ticket. To get results, you have to take action. The amount of success you have is limited by the amount of action you take. And that is it. Listen to that. The amount of success you have or will have in your life is limited only by the amount of action you take. Stay away from the people who tell you to stop working so hard, that suggest you should take some time off. You should relax and take it easy. Stay away from them. Look, you can take it easy once you make it. You can take it easy once you finish. For now, take action and take it in massive quantities. The human being is capable of far more than they force themselves to do every day. You know, I took massive action in my life and have done so until it became a way of life, a discipline. Am I a maniac? I don't think so. Other people do. Other people think, man, dude, you push hard and you go fast. But I don't see it like that. See, I certainly don't think I'm a maniac, and I can tell you that I'm living a life that, you know, no one in my entire heritage, grandfather, great-great-grandfather, they haven't experienced this lifestyle. Do you think a man will ever get elected president of the United States without taking massive action to ensure he gets elected? Don't think it's going to happen. Do you think Tiger Woods didn't take and doesn't still take massive action to maintain his position as a golfer in the world? Look, Mr. Woods outpractices mentally and physically everyone in his field. And because of his dedication to massive action, he has reached levels that others said was impossible. To become president in your field, you will have to be out of balance. You will have to be totally focused and dedicated, and you will have to follow that up with tremendous amounts of action. 4 degrees of action. Now, you can never take enough action in life. Everybody clear on that? It's impossible. Take some more. It's not going to hurt anything. Worst is you're going to get tired. Man, I'm really tired. I worked hard. Okay, well, hey, I've been really tired when I didn't work hard. So at least you'll get some results now. You can never take enough action in life. This is called 4 degrees of action. You can only take too little. Too much action will never get you into trouble, at least not old trouble. In fact, taking action is the way to get you out of trouble. The only time that action will cause you trouble is when there isn't any or when there's not enough. Now, I need to add something to that. Once you take new levels of action, you will actually get new problems. When you take enough action, you will end up with a new problem. It has been said that there are 3 degrees of action in life, but that's not true. Let me give you the 3 and then I'll give you the 4th. Number 1, the right action. Number 2, the wrong action. Number 3, no action, which will always result in nothing. And in my world, there's the 4th action. Massive action. That's the one I live by. The 4th action, massive action, is by far the most successful tool I've had in my life and has resulted in more success for me than any other single thing that I have done. When someone asks me, hey Grant, what's made the one difference, the biggest difference? Dude, it's simple, massive action. I mean, I don't even know what I'm doing half the time and I'll take action. Even when I had no clue, I went ahead and I took action. If I wanted to get a loan on a piece of property, for instance, I'd go to 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 lenders. When I bought a piece of property and was interested, I don't make one bid on one piece of property. I've made multiple bids on the same piece of property. I've been 2 and 3 buyers on the same deal. When I throw a party, I invite lots of people. And then I repeat invitations. And then I make phone calls. And then I send out emails. See, when I'm done with inviting people, I do what's necessary to make sure we have a party, because I don't like small parties, and I'll bet you don't either. I like them big. I like them noisy. I like them overflowing with people. I'd rather have too many than too few, man. I'd like to have the police show up. I want to have a blast, and that requires massive action. One time I had a party at my home. We went through 2,600, almost 2,600 plastic cups. Now, that's a throwdown. See, that's the sign of a party. I didn't even know half the people that were there. You've heard the saying, go big or go home. I say, go massive or you're going to go passive. Massive action has to equal or equate or will equate to new problems. This is a formula. Once you hit the level of massive action, because the question is, what's massive? Massive actions result in new problems. I watch salespeople make a few phone calls, send out a few pieces of mail, then they stop, take a coffee break, gossip a little bit, talk about the latest news in the newspaper, and then go sit down and smoke a cigarette. They chatter about how business is slow later, and how the phone never rings, and prospecting doesn't work. Look, if you work the phone the way I do, you'd know that the phone does not work. It's the person on the phone who's working the phone. I never sit down to make one phone call, ever, never. If I'm going to sit down to make one phone call, then I'm going to make them all. When I sit down to use the phone, I do it with enough tenacity and enough massive amounts of quantity of action that I'm guaranteed to get something back in return for the action I took. If it's appointments you want, let's say, take massive action until your concern is no longer whether or not you'll get enough appointments, but how you will possibly handle the number of appointments that are coming. See, the amount of action, massive action, would create new problems. Hey, dude, I got too many people showing up. I got 3 appointments at 5 o'clock. See, new problem. That means you've hit enough action. One of my goals in my seminar business is to sell out the locations to the point where there aren't enough chairs to seat the attendees. Well, this always worries my sales reps in the market because they don't want the customers to get upset after paying, you know, $1,000 for a ticket and not having a chair. Well, that's not a new and good problem. Would you agree? That's not a new and good problem. You want new problems that are good problems. I want to be oversold. One of my salespeople protested and said, man, it's not fair to the audience, Grant. You can't sell them a seat and they don't have a seat. I'm like, bring it on, ding dong. Bring it on, baby. You fill the place up to a point where people don't have a place to sit. I'll handle the fallout. I'll handle the problems and we'll get them a chair. Look, you're worrying about the wrong things. Never worry about the wrong things because you won't ever get what you want. Doing too much will never fail you. Doing too little is the only thing that can fail you. When it comes to action, go big, go bold, and then go more. This is the one thing that will guarantee you results. Don't deal in small numbers and don't deal in small actions. Deal in large numbers and massive volumes of action. Look, go massive, not passive. Because the truth is, if you don't go massive, you're going passive. When I was just a young salesperson, man, I was rough, I'm telling you. I'm still a little rough is what my wife tells me. But at that time, look, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't have any finesse. I didn't have the training. I didn't have any of the polish, right? So what can a guy do when he's not cleaned up, polished, looking good, looking professional? What does he do? You know what you do? You do a lot of the rough edge stuff. Don't let not knowing keep you from taking action. Just take more. When you're not perfect and polished, the only way to compensate is by taking lots of action. You'll find that when you get enough volume going, you don't have to be perfect. Because the reality is you're never going to be perfect anyway. You'll never become polished at your career only handling a handful of opportunities. The more action you take, the more business you have, the more you get into new levels of action, the better chance you have actually of getting good at your job. Look, if you're unlucky enough to be one of those polished, smooth, professional types, looks good, sounds good, blue blood running through your veins, you'll still need to take massive action in order to get to higher levels of production. And I say that you're one of those unlucky people that's polished and professional and everything's going your way. I say it because, man, I've met a lot of veteran salespeople who've been around for many years and are very professional and they know their deal, but they have this air about them, this superiority about them, and they don't keep learning and they don't keep changing and they don't keep pouring it on and they're good at what they do and they got a lot of ability. But dude, they never hit it out of the park. You know why? Because they're not rough enough to take massive action. I'm talking about ugly amounts of action where you're crude and rude and unreasonable. And people are like, this guy's a freaking maniac is what he is. Well, that's me. Wake up. It takes massive action, not polish, to get what you want in life. No one will pay you for what you know, folks. They'll pay you for what you do. Production. Production. True levels of production yields true happiness. Most people don't get enough in life only because they never do enough in life. You hear that? Most people don't get enough out of life only because they don't do enough in life. Production makes people feel good. My father taught me this when I was 9 years old. Cut the grass, bag the leaves, and you'll feel good, man. It almost doesn't matter what you're producing or what you're doing, just as long as you're doing and producing something constructive. Decide to produce something and produce it in massive quantities and you will win in life. Production results in happiness. Money doesn't make you happy, but production does. Production makes you happy. There is a basic truth. This is a basic truth found by all kinds of men, women, religions, economic backgrounds, and ethnic groups on this planet. Production makes you feel good. Everybody will agree with that. Clean the yard, clean the car, make more phone calls, and you will feel better. Man feels better when he's producing, and more production he generates, the better he tends to feel. Again, money may or may not make you happy, okay? But production will. Man was born to work hard, said Dr. Michael DeBakey, the great heart surgeon, recently died. He said, man was born to work hard, and I believe that. In sales, massive action is the one single thing that will guarantee you increased success more than any other single thing. Let's say you want to guarantee yourself X, then you have to take massive amounts of action that will achieve X in abundance. Your new problem will no longer be how to achieve an abundance of X, rather how to manage the abundance of X. You get it? Massive action has to equal a new problem. Until you get a new problem, you haven't taken massive amounts of action. It is at this point that you will know you are finally doing enough. Short of a new problem, you have not taken enough action. Throw a pebble in a pond. It creates a ripple. Pound the pond with mortar, round after round after round, and then follow it with round after round after round, and look. You won't create ripples, man. You'll create a massive lake and everyone around will come to see what you are doing. If there's enough of adventure and enough excitement, they'll buy tickets from you to see the event. By taking enough action, something will be changed. Something will be created and results will be attained. In the sales arena, massive action is like the stairway to heaven, where the sales gods will praise you with trophies and trips and rewards. And the guarantees of new levels of income. Your fellow salespeople, however, may praise you only with criticism. So beware. They'll tell you that you're working too hard and give you free advice like slow down, smell the roses, take it easy. Hey, disregard these people. Consider their suppressive comments as a sign that you are on the right track and continue to add wood to your fire until you burn the house down. All fire requires you to continue to add wood and fuel, and success in sales or